Welcome, everybody. Welcome to today's episode of The Law of Self-Defense. I am, of course, Attorney Andrew Branca for The Law of Self-Defense. Apologies for the slight delay in getting things rolling today. And for being an hour earlier than our normal scheduled time, doing a little experiment here today. And we have started now. Let's see. Should be starting.
Yeah.
Streaming on YouTube, Twitter, X, I guess, Rumble. Let's see. And the Law of Self-Defense member dashboard. Awesome. Let's see. I'll confess I scrambled a little bit to get this show going, hence the slight delay. So as always, when we get to the Q&A part of the show, Law of Self-Defense members in the member chat get their questions and comments addressed for free. For free. If you're on YouTube and you'd like to post a question or comment for me to address, I'm happy to do that, but it needs to be a $10 super chat. That seems silly to me. Don't be sending $10 super chats to YouTube. Just become a Law of Self-Defense member, and then you get your questions answered for free in the member dashboard. For 99 cents, you get a 2-week trial membership at lawofselfdefense.com/trial. And after the 2 weeks, it's still dirt cheap. It's only about 30 cents a day, less than $10 a month to be a Law of Self-Defense member. That's what I would encourage you to do rather than send super chats to YouTube. 99 cents at lawofselfdefense.com/trial. So today we're here to talk about this case. This case, it actually happened back in March, I believe, but the video, the tragic video of this event just got released. This involves the gentleman here in the yellow jacket works for the North Carolina Department of Transportation. That's his state truck, work truck. It's being stolen. There's a bad dude stealing his truck, and he's decided he's going to prevent this by pulling out his pistol. Fires a bunch of shots. Bad guy manages to back the truck away, and then the bad guy comes back with the truck, driving the truck, and runs this poor dude over and kills him. So today we're going to take a look at what went wrong. What were the legal mistakes, and what were the tactical mistakes that were made here? So with that out of the way, let's go ahead and launch the formal start of today's show. And today's show is brought to you by The Law of Self-Defense Principles, our best-selling book. You can check it out on Amazon if you like, 5-star rated, but don't buy it on Amazon. They'll charge you $25 for the book, plus shipping and handling. We only ask that you cover the cost of us shipping the book to you. This is your handbook to how to be hard to convict if you're ever compelled to use force in defense of yourself, your family, your property, and we want to give you the book for free. Again, just cover the cost of us shipping the book to you. lawofselfdefense.com/freebook. Easy enough to remember, or just scan that QR code there on your screen. All right, so let's take a look at this news story. Hopefully not too many ads pop up on this. And by the way, folks, I don't think I'm going to play the whole video. I'm going to stop it before we get to the point of impact, the fatal impact of the truck with the North Carolina dot worker, just because it's on YouTube and you know how YouTube is. So if you are a Law of Self-Defense member, however, I will embed the full video in the playback version of today's show on the Law of Self-Defense blog. So here we go. Man pulls gun on carjacker, ends up dead in harrowing turn of events. A Good Samaritan who tried to stop a carjacking by shooting the suspect is himself dead, becoming a cautionary tale about the critical importance of firearm training. So technically, I don't think this was a carjacking. I believe the truck was not occupied when it was being stolen. A carjacking would be the theft of a occupied vehicle. So I don't think the guy who stole the truck, at least it's not on video, like he forces people out of the truck. I suspect the truck was just left with the keys in it. I've never worked in a truck like this. I've never had that kind of job. But I would suspect, given all the ancillary equipment on the truck, that it would be not uncommon for the truck to be left with the keys in it, maybe even running. You know, probably not a good idea if you stopped for lunch, but whatever. So I don't think it was a carjacking. I think it was a larceny of a motor vehicle, maybe a robbery if it's a theft with threat of force. Then it would qualify as a robbery. I don't think it's really a carjacking. And I don't think this guy was a good Samaritan per se. I think he was just attempting to defend his property, or at least the property that he was responsible for, the work truck from the North Carolina Department of Transportation. But leave it to journalists to not really understand what they're writing about. Continuing now, the chilling incident occurred in March, but a graphic video of the crime went viral this weekend. According to police, the clip shows Jonathan LeCompte, 38, pointing a gun at Ricky Alex Driggers. And Ricky Alex looks just like you would expect him to look. There's a photo later in this news article. Ricky Alex Driggers, 28, after Driggers allegedly tried to steal a road crew's truck in front of a McDonald's restaurant in Lumberton, North Carolina. Don't get in the GD truck, fool, LeCompte yelled. The man ignored his warning, hopping into the pickup and shutting the door. LeCompte reacted by firing several shots at very close range that all apparently missed the suspect. The driver then slammed the truck in reverse and backed up at high speed. He then accelerated forward and mowed down LeCompte, who went flying in the air. Driggers was later arrested after crashing the stolen vehicle on a nearby highway. There he is, Ricky Alex Driggers, age 28. The suspect is being held without bail on charges of first-degree murder, larceny of a motor vehicle, attempted robbery, there's the robbery, and fleeing arrest. Quote, Good Samaritans got involved to prevent the carjacking, but the suspect was then able to steal the vehicle of one of the Good Samaritans. Oh, I see. So now it sounds like there was an initial carjacking independent of the work truck. And Good Samaritans, bystanders, got involved, prevented that vehicle from being stolen, and then the suspect hopped into the work truck. That seems to be what was going on. In the process of stealing the vehicle, the suspect reportedly intentionally struck one of the Good Samaritans with the stolen vehicle. That's the work truck employee, LeCompte. The North Carolina Department of Transportation also issued a statement praising LeCompte as a dedicated worker who was well-liked. Well, that's nice. He was a dedicated 16-year employee of the department working for the sign division of the blah, 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 blah. Jonathan was greatly admired and will be sincerely missed. The tragedy spotlights the importance of knowing how to handle a firearm if you wield one. Just like guns themselves don't kill people, they also can't stop a crime or save you if you are unprepared or unable to use them in the heat of the moment. This cautionary tale underscores that having a pistol does not guarantee safety, and you should be well-trained before carrying one and using it, because the life you save could be your own. All right, so there's the news article. Let's take a look at the video tape. See how I can share this. I'll make myself small. And here we go. It's only about a minute long. And again, I think I'm going to stop it just before the impact of the truck on LeCompte. But the full version of this video will be embedded in the Law of Self-Defense members playback version of today's show. Okay, I'm going to stop it there. Let's take a look at how many shots were fired here. One, two, three, four, and then it looks like he tried to fire one and maybe something went wrong with the gun. I almost heard a click, which you probably couldn't really hear from this distance, but so at least four shots at almost contact distance. I mean, how far is he from his intended target? 4 feet? 4 feet. So, what do we need to consider here? Well, a number of things. Let me see. Try that again. First of all, is the firing of these shots even lawful by the defender, the poor guy who died, at the hands of this murderer? What's happening here? I mean, there's two rationales, right, for the use of deadly defensive force here. Defense of persons and defense of property. But at the time these shots are being fired, what's the threat to persons? So far, this bad guy, all he's done is climb in the truck. And presumably, I think we can make a reasonable inference he's intending to steal the truck. But there's no apparent threat to persons here. So it's not a five elements of self-defense claim here, defense of persons. Because even when he drives away with the truck, when he's backing up, this guy clearly doesn't believe that he's about to be killed. Right? He's just standing there in the roadway. He probably thinks the bad guy's going to drive away in some other direction. And just because a truck is potentially a deadly weapon is not enough. There needs to be some evidence from which you can infer that he intends to use it as a deadly weapon. And of course, ultimately, there is, right? He comes racing back. This guy knows to get out of the way. He sees the truck coming back. At this point, the truck is apparently being used as a deadly weapon. But that's after the shots are fired. This first shot is fired here. So where's the threat to persons there? I don't see it. Now, there is a robbery here. Arguably. I mean, even a robbery requires a threat to persons, right? So where's the threat to persons here? Let's take a look at North Carolina defense of property law, shall we? So this is, we have at law self-defense, we have state-specific courses on the use of force law for each state. I just happen to have Illinois here on my desk, but we have one for every state, including North Carolina. And this is the section, the slide deck section on defensive property in North Carolina. So let's just go through it quickly. my generalized cautions against using force in defense of property in the absence of a threat to persons. We have two types of property, least defensible and highly defensible property. Highly defensible property always includes things like your home, may include a place of business, may include an occupied motor vehicle. If there were other people in this truck when it's being stolen, then arguably it's highly defensible property. We'll take a look at that under North Carolina law. But if it's unoccupied, then it's just a theft of property, least defensible property. And you can only use non-deadly force in defense of least defensible property in the absence of a forcible felony. Now, is this a forcible felony? Maybe. Let's see. Home, workplace, and motor vehicle protection. So, the law in North Carolina would create a legal presumption that this worker, LeCompte, that he was presumed to have held a reasonable fear of imminent death or serious bodily harm if both of the following apply. The person against whom the defensive force is used, Drigger here, was in the process of unlawfully and forcefully entering or had unlawfully and forcefully entered a home, motor vehicle, or workplace. And then a kidnapping scenario. And the person who uses defensive force knew or had reason to believe that the unlawful and forcible entry was occurring or had occurred. Well, certainly this is unlawful. Is it forcible? Did he break something to get in? generally forcible for purposes of these presumption of reasonable statutes requires that you broke something to get in. The reason they require both unlawful and forceful is because it's possible someone could be an innocent intruder. Now, obviously, we know this guy's not an innocent intruder, but nevertheless, that's how the statute's written. Has to be unlawful and forcible, because there may be an innocent explanation for why someone's unlawfully in your home or in your vehicle. We've probably all had the experience where we walk up to a vehicle that looks just like one we own. We open the door. Maybe we even sit in it. And then we're like, oh my gosh, this is not my car. Certainly that's happened to me. So I'm unlawfully present in someone else's car, but without malice. So there's an innocent explanation. It was just a mistake. I happen to own a car that's visually identical. There is no innocent explanation for why somebody would be in your property unlawfully if they broke something to get in, right? That's why they require that forcefully. But normally it requires a breaking. So, for example, one of the innocent intruder scenarios that comes up is a repairman sent to the wrong house. So he's told, listen, these people can't be home. They have to be at work, but they're going to leave their back door open so you can get in and fix their dishwasher while they're at work. And then they give the repairman the wrong address. And he goes to the wrong address, gets there, walks around to the back of the house. Sure enough, the back door is unlocked, opens the door, steps in. He's in the wrong house. He's not there by license. He's not there with permission. He's unlawfully present. But he's not there with malice. And he didn't break anything to get in, right? Breaking something to get in obviously would eliminate any possibility of an innocent intruder. So again, here, of course, we know even now that this guy knows he's not allowed in the truck. He knows it's not his truck. This dude's yelling at him not to get in the truck. He's not an innocent intruder, but nevertheless, the statute requires a forcible entry. Then there's a typical list of exclusions where that legal presumption would not apply. For example, if the person entering the property has license to enter the property, that's clearly not the case here. There's the kidnapping scenario, not a case here. If the person who owns the property, who uses the defensive force, is using that property for any criminal offense that involves the threat or use of physical violence against another individual, that would be an exclusion. Doesn't apply here. Or if the defensive force is used against the law enforcement, doesn't apply here. Or if the person who's doing the unlawful enforceable entry has given up, stopped trying to unlawfully enforceably, or has exited, then the legal presumption of reasonable fear ends. That wouldn't apply here either. And there's also a legal presumption, not just about the defender's state of mind, which is what that legal presumption does. It presumes that the defender had a reasonable fear of death or serious bodily injury, deadly force, harm. There's also a presumption under North Carolina law about the intruder's state of mind, that they are presumed to be entering forcibly and unlawfully with the intent to commit an unlawful act involving violence, force or violence. The trouble is this guy didn't break anything to get in, so I don't think the legal presumption would apply. What qualifies as highly defensible property under North Carolina law? Well, a home would. That doesn't apply here. A motor vehicle or a workplace. So motor vehicle would qualify as highly defensible property for purposes of this legal presumption. But again, we don't have a forcible entry. You'd have to argue that just simply opening the door of the vehicle was a forcible entry. I mean, I could make that argument, but it's not like it was locked and he broke the window to get in, right? Which would clearly be forcible. The fact that a car can be used to kill someone is not sufficient for inferring that that's going to happen. You need some evidence. Vehicles are not normally used to kill people, right? They're not deadly weapons by design. Anything can be used to kill people. The shoelace on your shoe could be used to kill someone if you wrap it around their neck. It depends on the manner of use. We're going to differentiate between using a vehicle in its normal manner, stealing a car, which is just larceny of a vehicle, stealing a car with threat of force, that would be a robbery, and actually using a vehicle as a deadly weapon. Now, ultimately, this truck is used as a deadly weapon, but there's no reason to believe that early on when those shots are fired, or even immediately after the car's driven away. That the victim here, he himself does not perceive that the vehicle is about to be used as a deadly weapon. He's just standing there in the street. We got a super chat here. Does fighting over the door make it forcible? But are they fighting? They're arguing. So we really come in here. I mean, is the bad guy threatening force against the worker? The worker's pointing a gun at him. I mean, maybe the legal presumption would work. I think it's a stretch. I think if the bad guy had used force on the worker, you could argue that would be a forcible entry. He's not using force on the property, but he's using force to overwhelm the defensive capability of the worker to enter the property. I think that would be a reasonable argument, but I don't see that here. It looks like the dude's just calmly walking up, opening the door, climbing into the truck. I mean, like a lunatic, he's being held at gunpoint when he's doing it. Oh, did I just answer a super chat valued at $1.08? Well, it's a foreign currency. I can't tell. I saw 20. I only work in US dollars. Let's see. Now, when the truck's coming back here, right? We can't see it yet, but everyone's running now. Now the truck is clearly being used as a deadly weapon. Could you use deadly force against the driver now? Well, of course. And that's not what they're doing. It's unlikely to be very effective, by the way, with the truck at speed. Bullets going through a windshield don't go where you think they're going to go. And especially given this guy's shooting performance when he was proximate to the bad guy and the bad guy was stationary. You can't count on him to hit anything under these circumstances. He doesn't even make the effort. So here, clearly, the truck's being used as a deadly weapon. But that's not when the shots were fired, right? So we would know, we could justify the use of the shots. Now, of course, this victim was killed, ultimately. The bad guy's been charged with murder. The victim's dead, so he doesn't have to worry about any criminal charges for an unlawful use of force, deadly force, discharge of a firearm. His troubles are behind him. But there's another facet here, and it was touched on in the news article too, and that is, folks, if you're going to carry a gun for personal protection, and by the way, unless there is a defense of self, defense of persons, or a defense of highly defensible property argument here, under North Carolina law, you cannot use deadly force in defense of mere personal property. So this shooting, this use of deadly force would be unlawful. Now, in Texas, could you use it to prevent? You'd still have to characterize this as a robbery. It is a theft, but it's not a theft during the nighttime. We've covered Texas Penal Code 9.42, deadly force in defense of personal property in the last couple shows. So I don't want to dive into it all over again. Texas is the only state that allows for the use of deadly force in defense of property in the absence of a threat to persons. But of course, we're not in Texas. We're in North Carolina. And even in Texas, if it's a threat, now he's charged, the bad guy's charged with robbery. So there may be evidence not included in the news article that would qualify this as a robbery, in which case you could use deadly force in Texas and probably in North Carolina. So there's arguments to be made, but it's certainly not clear cut that the shots fired would be lawful. There's ambiguity here. Say he had shot and killed this driver and turned out the driver was a, 13-year-old young black male. You think there wouldn't be arguments made that the shooting was unnecessary? Because remember, if he shot and hit him and killed him, there would be no reversing of the truck and driving back and running anybody over, right? It would have been killing someone over mere car theft. Is how it would be characterized. Now, those are kind of the legal complications here. But there are tactical complications here. Folks, if you're going to carry a gun for personal protection, The gun is not some magic talisman that makes bad guys disappear or stop what they're doing. You need to know how to run that gun effectively, safely for yourself and other innocent people, and effectively in terms of accomplishing the desired goal. Let's presume here there was no question that these shots fired would be lawful, deadly defensive force. What the heck happened? Apparently, this guy fires four rounds within 3 or 4 feet of the bad guy and doesn't hit him once. Where are those bullets going? Because bullets don't miss. They miss their intended target, but they keep going until they hit something. And you're not accomplishing your goal. If you're actually discharging this gun because you're trying to prevent unlawful, deadly force harm to innocent people, you're not accomplishing that. All you're doing is endangering innocent people and not accomplishing what we're presuming here would be the lawful goal of neutralizing this deadly force threat. Say you knew this guy was going to run a bunch of people over with the truck. So you shoot at him four times from 4 feet away. And you miss four times. So this guy is carrying a gun he has no idea how to use. Folks, that's unforgivable. Now, listen, I'm a Second Amendment absolutist. I think he had every right to carry a gun he doesn't know how to use. I certainly would not make training a condition of the Second Amendment. Most people who successfully defend themselves with a gun have zero training. Maybe a scintilla of training. That's not a good thing. I say that, and a lot of the trainers out there get mad at me. Oh, you're telling people that they don't need training. Training's good. Training makes you harder to kill. I'm a big advocate of training. I'm a trainer. I'm an NRA instructor, pistol, rifle, personal protection. I've trained hundreds of people how to run guns. I do roughly a week of intensive pistol training myself every year, at least. For most of my adult life, I was a very active competitive shooter. For many years of my life, I was firing 10,000 rounds a year in competition and practice, sometimes more. So I'm an advocate of training. The truth is, guns are not that complicated for most self-defense problems. Again, most people who successfully defend themselves with a gun, they don't have any training. They're not competitive shooters. But, folks, the more training you have, the more likely you are to be effective with that gun. And if you have the means, I think you're crazy not to make sure you're as effective with that gun that you're carrying around as you reasonably can be. This is unforgivable. Why even have the gun in this scenario? He's just a danger to other innocent people. If he'd been effective with this gun, and we presume the use of deadly defensive force was warranted, that truck should never have moved. That should have been four solid hits. Shouldn't have needed four shots. And if you can't make the hits, don't take the shots. I mean, of course, misses happen, over-penetrations happen, but you should have a high degree of confidence that you're going to make those hits when you press that trigger. This was sent to me my buddy Will Parker up in Montana. Will's a firearms instructor up in the Kalispell area of Montana, almost Canada. I'll be seeing Will this summer when I go up there. I'm doing a trip through British Columbia on the motorcycle. He's having a good friend of mine, T.C. Fuller, Dr. T.C. Fuller. Best man at my wedding, former federal law enforcement officer. TC's doing a training course. I think he's doing 2 days, but I think it's a 1 day course he's teaching twice. Let me look up the date. These guys should send me something I can use for promotional material. It looks like it's August 10th and 11th. August 10th and 11th, up in the Kalispell area of Montana. Beautiful country, by the way. Gorgeous, especially that time of year. TC is a good shooter, probably better than me. Also was a very active competitive shooter, above and beyond his law enforcement training. He's a combat vet. from the military, Army Captain Armor Bradley's, I think, in the first of the Gulf Wars. And then he did several trips back for the later wars. So really knows guns, really knows how to shoot, has real world experience, has seen the elephant, as Jeff Cooper would say. So I would encourage you to take a look at that course or get competent training from someplace. I mean, Will would be great. Will's also a graduate of the Law Self-Defense Instructor Program, so he knows the legal stuff super well. Also, you only get credentialed in our instructor program if you pass a very rigorous final exam. But folks, if you're carrying the gun around, make sure you know how to run the gun. You're doing yourself and all the innocent people around you a profound disservice. It cost this guy his life. Could have cost other people their lives. So tactically, folks, the gun's not magic. By the way, a lot of bad guys don't care that you have a gun. They don't care that you're pointing the gun at them. They may not care much that you've shot them. A lot of bad guys have been shot before, and they're still here. So you need those hits to be effective, or to know that you can make effective hits if that's what's required. Because that guy might try to take that gun away from you. Then what? You're going to miss four times and give him your gun? All right, let's take a look at the Q&A. Very frustrating to watch that. I mean, the whole purpose of having lawful concealed carry, having a Second Amendment, is so people can effectively defend themselves with firearms against lethal criminal predation. You make it pointless if you shoot four times from 3 or 4 feet away and you can't get a single hit. Will put his email in the chat for that class. Let's see if I can get this right. I'll put a banner on the bottom of the screen there, Will. Will at fmgw.com. You can reach Will about that TC Fuller class or any Will. Will's a professional full-time self-defense instructor. So he's got tons of classes, tons of guest instructors. I've taught up there several times at Will's invitation. He's got a great facility. Okay, so let's take a look at the Q&A. Again, if you're a Law of Self-Defense member, you get your questions answered for free. So you might want to consider that. 2-week free trial at lawselfdefense.com/trial. Let's see, from the member chat, Dan says, I really enjoyed the Law of Self-Defense live online class this past Saturday, our advanced class. Such an informative class. Thanks, Dan. That's very kind of you. By the way, I should mention, so there's a competitive shooting sport called, what do they call it these days? We always called them steel shoots. I think they've been bought and they slightly changed the name. But it's basically, you're shooting, let's say, just with a handgun. And you're shooting at five different steel plates. And you can shoot the steel plates in any order except the last one. There's one designated as the stop plate. You have to shoot that one last. And you have to hit the plate, but nobody cares where you hit the plate. As long as we hear the ping, it's a hit. So there's no scoring, really. Except hit or miss. And it's really the winner is determined by time. So the person with the fastest time shooting these five plates is the winner. Some of these plates are giant. I mean, they're like 2 feet by 3 feet, and they're only a few feet in front of you. And I've seen some very good shooters try to outrace their gun and miss those giant plates. And by the way, most of the plates are much smaller. Most of the plates are like 8-inch round steel plates at a greater distance. So you have to be able to shoot to do this sport at all. So really good shooters who could hit 8-inch steel plates at distance all day long, they put themselves under a little bit of pressure, they outrace their guns, and they miss this giant plate right in front of them. Well, folks, you have to be, that's just a match, right? So you get multiple runs at these plates, and your worst one gets thrown out. So you can take a chance on outracing your gun and missing a giant steel plate. But when you're in a fight for your life, you can't. You have to know what you're capable of and what you're not capable of in running that firearm. All right. Let's see. How do you miss? People miss. And folks, it's also worth keeping in mind what you're actually shooting at, right? On a deadly force criminal predator, you're shooting at about a grapefruit size space around their heart. That's your primary target. If that doesn't work, maybe their head, but heads move a lot. It can be hard to hit a head. You're not really shooting at, the goal isn't to hit any random point on their body. You're trying to hit something that will make them ineffective as promptly as possible. Presumably they're trying to kill somebody. That's why you're shooting them. So that's what you should be thinking of. Some people would say a playing card. It's probably a little bit broader than that, a grapefruit. But that's your actual target. I mean, and that's what you should train to. And then if you miss a little bit, at least you're still getting hits. You're not missing 4 times at 3 feet. Let's see. Jeffrey says, I doubt those were lawful shots. Seems very sketchy to me. Of course, no one's going to really ask the question now because the shooter's dead. How the heck do you miss at that range? It's terrible. Jeffrey says, then he lost situational awareness. That's a great point. He does. He gets very lackadaisical here. I'll pull it back up. The truck races away. What are you doing standing in the middle of the street? He just gave up. He figured the fight was over. The fight's not over till it's over, folks. And of course, we learned very quickly that it's not over. That guy who stole the truck, maybe he was just pissed that you shot at him 4 times. Terrible. As Jeffrey says, the defendant here just lost situational awareness. He made himself, I talk all the time about being hard to convict, right? I mean, it's on my mug. Our law of self-defense coffee mug. On the back, be hard to kill, be hard to convict. I teach the hard to convict stuff. But the top priority has to be hard to kill. If you don't win the physical fight, the rest of it doesn't matter. Don't get lackadaisical. If this was a young black kid stealing the truck who got shot dead, Benjamin Crump would be suing the Department of Transportation. Absolutely. Jeffrey says, missed 4 times, must have been a Taurus and never got trained. I don't think much of Taurus firearms. I'll agree with you there, but I have seen Tauruses get the job done. Usually not lawfully. Michael Dunn, the loud rap music shooting down in Florida some years ago, claimed that one of the young men in this SUV playing loud rap music pointed a shotgun at him. He retrieved his Taurus pistol from the glove compartment. It was whatever the Beretta 92 knockoff is that Taurus sells. Fired 3 quick shots and mortally wounded that intended target. Then, of course, he screwed up the rest of it. Will says the August 11th date for T.C. Fuller's class has 5 seats left for the second day. So I guess the first day, Saturday, August 10th, must be sold out. 5 days left for Sunday, August 11th. By the way, for anyone who's there August 10th, I'll be there. I'm going to be volunteering as a range officer for that Saturday, August 10th class. So you'll get to meet me too. I won't be teaching, but I'll be hanging out, making sure nobody leaves with doing what I can to make sure nobody leaves with any more holes than they showed up with. Kenneth Winslow says, this is the reason well-regulated is in the Second Amendment. Excuse me, folks. Right, so well-regulated is not a condition of exercising your Second Amendment privileges, but the reason the founders put the Second Amendment in the Constitution was they wanted people to be sufficiently trained and proficient with firearms that they could show up for militia service and be well-regulated, operating properly. That's the government interest in the Second Amendment, as opposed to our individual interest of things like self-defense. Phil says, there really aren't all that many well-trained law enforcement officers. Many of them are qualified by their department standards and not much more. Yeah, most cops can't run a gun. Very basic skill set. Very common experience in competitive shooting is that a police officer shows up, often in uniform with a service pistol, to shoot the match and gets his butt handed to him by a bunch of fat accountants and lawyers who show up every week to shoot competitively, who have a passion for shooting competitively, and they get quite good. They get much better than someone whose shooting experience is, you know, twice a year or quarterly qualification, 50 round course of fire, shot statically without movement. Now, there are law enforcement officers who are world-class shooters. T.C. Fuller is one of them, but it's not because they're law enforcement. It's because they have a personal passion for being competent with a firearm. If the man taking the truck shoved or pushed the shooter, would that be enough to fire the gun? You might have an argument then for that being a forcible entry into the vehicle. It would solve the innocent intruder problem, right? Then it would be, there would be no innocent explanation for that. I mean, there really isn't anyway, but the statute does require forcible. This North Carolina statute. Many states have this legal presumption of reasonable fear for in defense of highly defensible property. Some of them don't require forcible entry. Some of them only require unlawful entry. Let's see. Ashley says, once the truck driver got shot, if he drives at the shooter, is it mutual combat? So say the shooting is unlawful, an unlawful use of deadly force. Well, then the person driving the truck would be privileged to defend himself against that unlawful deadly force. The timing here wouldn't really work because at the time he decides to drive the truck back at the defender's not in that moment shooting at him. Jeffrey says, just bought another case of 9mm and a case of 5.56. Best prices I've seen since 2019. Is that right? Well, folks, a lot of people don't think about buying ammo until there's some kind of crisis and the prices have gone through the roof. It's a pretty good policy, if you care about such things, to buy ammo when it's not a crisis. Just get a case. It doesn't go bad. Let's see. All right, that looks like all the questions there from the members. Let me take a look at if there's any super chats other than the one I already answered. And there's not, except for the NOK. I don't know what NOK currency is. Is that Korea? Norway. I've been to Norway. In the winter, everything was pretty white, but I like Norway. A lot of pretty women in Norway. All right, folks, I think that's all I have for today, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up. Again, don't forget, you can get a free copy of our best-selling book, Law of Self-Defense Principles, at lawofselfdefense.com/free book. Check out Will's August 11th course. It's being taught by T.C. Fuller. Will Parker's hosting. My buddy T.C., they got 5 seats left. The email to contact Will about the class is will@fmgw.com. And I'll just remind all of you that if you carry a gun so you're hard to kill, please know how to run it. At least be able to hit an adversary at 3 or 4 feet, 4 times out of 4 times. But if you carry a gun so you're hard to kill, so your family is hard to kill, that's why I carry a gun. So me and my family are hard to kill. Then you also owe it to yourself and your family to make sure you know the law so you're hard to convict as well. Until next time, I remain Attorney Andrew Branca for the Law of Self-Defense. Stay safe.